Hi guys, welcome to Safe Space Podcast. You're with your host Emma and
Hester.
Today we're going to be talking about...
We're going to be talking about the origination of the popularisation of the blues music and how it was a bunch of lezzers.
Oh.
And how it was erased from history.
It was erased.
Yes. It's not a vibe.
No.
Well, that's why we're here.
That is why we're here. And we're queer.
Like two highlighter pens with legs and arms and minds. Actually, you'll see here that was actually gay. And you, Emma, what are you here for?
I can't wait to tell you my story. It's about, in 1911, doctors thought bicycles were making women gay.
Fantastic.
I know. Can't wait to delve into that.
It's going
to
be a barrel of laughs.
So,
shall we get on with the show?
Let's get on with the show.
Okay.
Enjoy, guys.
Emma,
yeah.
Did you know that blues music,
mm-hmm.
which is basically the basis for rock and roll and all music beyond there,
mm-hmm.
was first popularised by a group of black queer women whose queerness has been erased from history?
Well, I never.
So in the 1920s, millions of African Americans moved from the Deep South to the northern cities like New York and Chicago in America, leaving the racial segregation and discrimination of the Jim Crow laws behind.
Right.
And seeking out economic opportunities in the North. And African Americans established vibrant and influential communities. These were communities that black culture and art could finally thrive. And it was, this whole thing was called the Harlem Renaissance.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Heard of that?
Yeah, I've heard
Good.
Of that.
Good. You were listening in history class, my friend. However, many people don't know that it was a very queer time for black Americans as well.
Why?
So in Harlem, in New York City,
known
as the Black Mecca at the time, sexuality became a form of emancipation and freedom.
Wow.
And a lot of the culture and the music and the art was about freedom. And blues music itself was the perfect space to express this.
I love the power of music.
Yeah, because it was the space where black people could express their life experience and their truth that they hadn't really been able to before.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy because it kind of like set the foundation for today
for
in
all
music.
For all popular music.
Wow.
Bonkers. So it was a group of fearless black, lesbian and bisexual women that she were chiefly responsible for popularising blues music in the clubs in Harlem and eventually taking on the record industry that was new.
Right.
And they even sang openly about their lesbian love affairs.
No.
In records. Yeah. So blues music was also known as the devil's music by Christians, and it also thrived outside of the white mainstream culture. So it became a safe space for black people to express their lived experience without being targeted. Also, during Prohibition, bars and clubs went underground, which was a perfect place for queer nightlife to flourish.
It still flourishes there.
It does indeed. And in Harlem, they had these things called fairy balls.
Is that the start of the balls?
Well, so yeah, it attracted people from all over the country. Performers would cross-dress.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be awards for lavish gowns and
the balls.
The balls, exactly. And blues music was played.
Wow.
Because blues music was this counterculture, you know?
Yeah. I want to know more about these women, though.
I will tell you.
Okay.
Now, introducing the queer divas of blues.
Is that what they were called?
That's what I've called them.
Okay.
Known as the mother of the blues, there is Ma Rainey.
Okay.
Who was the OG queer woman to pioneer blues music.
God, what a statement.
Ma Rainey.
Can you imagine being that? Oh, what do you do as a job? Well, actually.
I'm the mother of the blues.
Yeah, mother of the blues. Created basically the basis of all.
OG queer woman.
Sorry, off track.
She was married to a man, but was known to be a bisexual.
Right.
And in 1928, she produced the most lesbian blues song I've ever heard. And it was called Prove It On Me. I'm going to read a little quote from it for you.
Okay.
I went out last night with a crowd of my friends. It must have been women, because I don't like no men. I wear my clothes just like a fan. Talk to the girls just like any old man. Because they say I do it. Ain't nobody caught me. Sure, gonna prove it on me.
Brilliant.
So she's a bit like, do what I fucking want, you know?
Love the energy.
And one night, apparently, she was drinking with a group of girls, and they were said to be making so much noise that a neighbour actually called the police. So the police arrived, all the women fleed the scene, but they were already getting into it, and they were all naked. So Ma Rainey's running outside there trying to cover herself up with someone else's dress. The police catch her, throw her in jail. Guess who comes to pick her up? Only her protege, Bessie Smith.
Bessie Smith.
Bessie Smith, very well-known blues singer. One of the most successful blues singers.
Wow.
Ma Rainey was Bessie Smith's mentor in many ways.
Oh, as in that kind of way as well?
Potentially. It's unknown. But
right.
Bessie Smith actually learned a lot from Ma Rainey and became the highest earning black artist out of her time.
Incredible.
But she was also known for her lesbian affairs.
I love the way you say it.
Most notably with a young dancer called Lillian Simpson.
Ooh.
They were known for their dramatic and chaotic, very public arguments. Something I am sure that you don't do, Emma, given your conflict aversion.
Mm-hmm.
However, this is not all about you.
Shock.
In an argument, Bessie is said to have exploded at Lillian once by saying, I've got 12 women on this show and I can have one every night if I want. So she was a little bit mean.
Oh.
Bessie is also known to have been a frequent visitor of things called buffet flats, which were basically parties where anything went, anything was permissible.
Wow.
And she sang openly about these experiences in one of her songs, which I will read a quote from now. When you see two women walking hand in hand, just look them over and try to understand. They'll go to those parties, have the lights down low, only those parties where women can go.
I love that.
It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who knew?
It's got such an allure to it.
Yeah, and also like such a risky thing, but, and so obviously queer. It's not, there's no denial.
I'm
not really sure.
Two women walking hand in hand.
Don't worry about it. They're just having a good time.
Yeah. At the start, you said that they blues music, they wrote about their experiences. You can just see it's like almost like diary entries poetically used to address a message to the outer world of their life.
Yeah, actually, which became celebrated.
Yeah.
But not just by black culture, but also by white mainstream culture.
Mm.
And in a way, you think, well, that must have been accepted then. Because they knew what they were singing about the same way we do.
Mm.
Now I've got number three, which is a Miss Ethel Waters, also known as Sweet Mama Stringbean. She started her acting and singing career in the 20s in New York, and she ended up performing on Broadway and in Hollywood.
Nice.
She produced the first blues records for a black-owned production company.
Nice.
Called Black Swan. And everybody knew that she was queer. It's kind of open.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
She even lived with her partner, also called Ethel. They were called the Two Ethels.
Oh!
And they toured together. And they even did, like, drag skits of their relationships. So they were hiding in plain sight kind of thing.
Yeah.
But also there must have been a level of just like, well, yeah, that's Ethel and Ethel. They're together. They live together. Have at it, you know?
Yeah.
There must have been a liberal attitude towards it.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that in the arts that's made more possible?
I think so, but I also think you have to think that Harlem at the time, all these people are moving from places where they're being completely oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
And two cities where they basically dominate entire areas of a city, and it becomes a bit of a space where they can open themselves up and be themselves.
And just accept themselves.
Yeah, and I think loads of diversity must have come out of that.
Yeah.
And I think people would have been like, you know, elated by it. Like, it would have been such a moment of relief and like expression and like joy.
Beautiful.
As well.
That's
really
lovely.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Finally, we've got Gladys Bentley.
Great name.
Gladys Bentley, the bulldagger who sang the blues. Now, the bulldagger is an old word for lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been largely forgotten from the blues world. However, she was a hugely famous cabaret singer.
Right.
She always dressed in drag, this white suit, pretty fucking iconic.
I think I've seen pictures of her.
You might have done. You might have done.
White suit. She had like a little moustache.
I don't think she did have a mustache.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm
not sure. We'll check it out.
Okay.
But she was an out lesbian. And she even claimed to have married a white woman somewhere. She performed at a place called the Clam House, which was the most swinging gay bar in town.
Mm-hmm.
She was backed up by a chorus of drag queens.
Slay.
She dressed in men's clothes.
Another slay.
Played piano.
Slay.
And sang her own raunchy lyrics to popular songs at the time. With a deep growling voice. Whilst flirting with the female members of the audience.
Slay.
Yeah, slay, indeed. I mean...
Big fat slay.
Big slay. Because, that, I mean, what a show. Yeah. In 1920s.
I want to see it.
Yeah. So, oh. This is what I'm saying again. Yeah. A known queer venue. People go in there from all over the city to see this woman do exactly what she wants to do.
Yeah.
There was a liberal attitude towards sexuality there. Now, these women changed how black women, and any women for that matter,
yeah,
could define themselves in the 1920s.
Right. Is this, are we talking to Stormy here?
Stormy's a bit later.
She isn't she?
But not that much later.
But you have to think about all these people that are like around the sort of same time.
I mean, actually, Stormy probably would have been around
yeah.
then.
Yeah. Like growing up. Like starting to like go to the clubs.
Seeing this, yeah. these basically celebrities that lived yeah. in, amongst them.
Yeah.
Who were queer women. Like that is representation. That's incredible.
Yeah.
And this movement was also probably very likely the inspiration for the flapper movement, which we learn about, which is generally seen as a quite white movement mm-hmm. of women dressing very androgynously, smoking, drinking, being sexually liberated.
Yeah.
That was likely inspired by the black women in Harlem.
Yeah.
You know? However, the queerness of that cultural moment has been forgotten.
Classic.
But why? What happened? That's what we want to find out, right?
Yeah, yeah. Good question. Have you got the answer?
Yeah. So after the Great Depression and the World Wars,
mm-hmm.
there was a surge of conservatism that took over in America and also a lot in Europe, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's for various reasons, because people came home after a war. Maybe there was like a need for a level of stability. Maybe there was a need to like control who and how we express ourselves after all that trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened, yeah. So it happened in loads of places. And a lot of communities that were minorities
mm-hmm.
veered away from queerness as an accepted life form. So the African American community, along with many other movements, stopped talking about the queerness of their lives because it would jeopardise the civil rights movement, basically.
Right.
And so writing and music and art that were seen as queer was removed from print. It was no longer published. And the queer bars became targets for harassment.
Ugh.
And the queer side of the Harlem Renaissance was erased from history. However, I think it's really vital that we remember this moment in queer black history that long predated Stonewall in New York
yeah,
City.
Yeah, that's so true. And was done through art and music.
Exactly. So queerness has always been very white and the history is really white, but I think this is so special because it's not white and it was happening and it was erased through basically a need to reprioritize. Well, we need rights for everyone.
Yeah.
But what are we going to do? We kind of have to sideline these people
yeah.
who are black queer people.
Wow.
That happens a lot in movements, but yeah. it's so sad that that history is gone because it's so beautiful
yeah.
when you see these women like who just did not give a fuck.
Yeah. Bring that back.
Yeah. Well, I think it's coming back.
Yeah. I always think about queer culture that not many people self-reflect on like the past and who they are and why they do it. Like it's so easy and quick to be like, yeah, we're liberated. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And we invented it.
And we invented
we
it.
We didn't invent it.
No, we didn't.
They were seeds.
Yeah.
Sown, you know, throughout history that yeah. allow you.
And I bet Hester as well that like, you know, we what we do when we talk about queer history and queer stories, I bet there were people at that time trying to unearth the past.
For sure.
And it's just like
100%.
Nothing we're doing here is new.
No.
We're just talking in a room to people that are curious about stuff and talking about stuff because it interests us and we think that some people want to hear it.
For shizzle. Nothing's new. And yeah, like you think we have a radical queer movement
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
It's have like, a look at these women, you
yeah.
know, 50 years out of when black people were enslaved.
Good gosh.
And they've gone to Harlem
and
they've built up this entire culture,
yeah.
which is the basis for most popular culture today.
Yeah.
That's quite incredible. And then, and they did that through their like liberation and their queerness as well, like added to their yeah. ability to do that, but it's been forgotten, so.
I often do think as well with art, it's really nice when people are given the freedom to be creative and be artistic in who they are and express that. And I think now we live in a world where it's quite constrained. I don't know if you feel like that, but like my total queerness and my total identity, I feel like I don't do as enough art. I feel like we live in this society where we have to go to work 9 to 5 and we're not given the space and time to be like, right, let's create a culture.
For sure, but I think we should take it too. I think
take it, what do you mean?
We should like, people never had time. People never had money.
Yeah, you know?
You think they had money.
That's true. Yeah, it's a good point, actually.
And I think, like, a lot of art, a lot of music has become very individualised and very individualistic things. These women resonated with a lot of people. Because she was singing about a life that they all shared, you know, an oppression that they all shared. Yeah, and in a space which incubated diversity. So Harlem incubated diversity and celebrated it. And that's from that diversity. It's like nature.
Yeah.
It's like when you've got different plants all together. Like, it helps to create a forest, you know. Like, you've just got grass. It's just grass, man.
Master, that was a hot take.
That was a big hot take.
Yeah, that was a real hot take. That shows that anyone that's listening right now and you want to make any art, do it.
Do it, but do it with people.
Yeah.
And, like, find this collective journey that we're all on.
Tell us what you're up to. DM us and say any creative venture. We want to hear it.
Yeah, we want to hear it and support it. But yeah, I just want to end by saying that black people defined the culture of America at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was black queer women that were the trailblazers that the community needed to do that. And that's wicked. So thank you, gals.
Apparently, riding a bicycle, Hester, can make you gay.
Hells yeah, better get me some on my bike.
In the 19th century, doctors actually thought that bicycles would turn women into lesbians.
Doctors, what's doing it to these women? The bikes. It's got to be the bikes.
Do you want to know what they actually thought the bikes were doing to them?
Yes.
So they made out that the design of the bike, so the position of the seat, the shape of the seat, and the position of the rider... was going to destroy purity and lead to lesbianism.
I mean... Why? Because it's a bit like a vagina.
Because women would start to understand their own pleasure and their own bodies, Hester.
Oh, so it would actually... How would the men doctors know that?
They probably didn't even understand women's...
So it would be like a vibrator. Because it would
exactly
be
going
sitting right
and,
there.
Yeah, and the position as well. Anyway, Professor Ellen Garvey is a professor in... America, and she studied the sort of advertising behind these bicycles and why it was that people thought that they were going to make turn people into lesbians and ruin purity and all that. And she wrote in an academic journal, which was titled Reframing the Bicycle, Advertising Supported Magazines and Scorching Women. This is what she wrote. Here, not only the saddle and its adjustment, but also speed is at fault and the punishment for stepping out of line is pain and pathology. The moment speed is desired, the body is bent forward in a charismatic curve and the body's weight is transmitted to the narrow anterior half of the saddle. With all the weight pressing on the preanal region, if a saddle is properly adjusted for a slow riding and in an unusual effort at speed or hill climbing, the body is thrown forward, causing the clothing to press against the hereby eliciting and arousing feelings hitherto unknown and unrealized by the young maiden and painful and debilitating granular erosion and polyoid growth will result.
I have no idea what any of that means.
Basically, she's saying that it's going to cause
orgasms.
Basically, Hester, cycling was seen as an opportunity for women to self-pleasure. There was a whole movement of anti-bicycles people, and they claimed that riding would ruin women's sexual health by promoting self-pleasure and would compromise gender definition.
I've heard it all now, mate. I've heard it all. The anti-bike movement of the 19th century.
Yeah. And a passage from Women on Wheels, the Bicycle and the Woman's Movement in the 1890s, said that what lengths these doctors went to try and eradicate this sort of self-pleasure and liberation for women. So-called hygienic saddles began to appear. Saddles with little or no padding, where a woman's genitalia would ordinarily make contact with the seat. High stems and upright handlebars, as opposed to more aggressively positioned drop-down handlebars, also were thought to reduce the risk of female sexual stimulation by reducing the angle at which a woman would be forced to ride.
Wow, because that's why, like, the women's bikes are like that, like, all like
and it's why women, especially in, like, Hollywood films and other films from that time, would side straddle,
because it was too bloody sexy. It does make you think they must have been bloody bored. All bloody pissing themselves about sitting on a bike for a few minutes.
Back then, Hester, society thought the bicycles were quite literally a threat to the statement of women belonging at the home. Basically, bicycles kind of was a symbol of what everything that the patriarchy hated. And you know what's really sad, Hester? Some of the world is still like that. There is a big movement to get women on bikes. Fortunately, though, where we live, we can ride a bicycle quite freely. So the next time you hop on a bicycle, remember this story.
I'm transformed. Honestly, I've always had a weird reverence to bikes. I've always thought, oh, fuck bikes. I just don't know what it is. I'm just like, oh, I hate bikes.
Why? I love bikes.
I think, like, it reminds me of, like, a straight couple just wandering around the roads of the Isle of Man. And
that's a bit of a random thing.
I don't know what it is, like. And I've always been like, oh, screw bikes. But now, actually, bikes are basically, like, you know, a cool alternative that breaks down the patriarchy and liberates women and sexuality. So maybe I must get back on my bicycle. Right. Okay, ladies.
They're great.
Gentlemen.
All, yeah.
They-thems.
They-thems.
Get on your bike.
Z-thems. It'll help the environment. It will help you feel free, and you might get a bit of pleasure out of it.
And you might have a bloody good time doing it, exactly. Okay. Well, thanks for that, Emma.
That's all right. Anytime.
Fascinating. I just did not know that about the bikes.
Mm.
Why are they like that? See? Isn't it crazy? Everything you look at, there's got a little imprint of queer history to it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. And it's quite, like, so affirming to find it and go, oh, that's why. Yeah. That's funny. Everything you look at, you can go, that's funny. That's funny. Even if it's tragic, it's still funny that it's, like, all just there and nobody knows about it.
Exactly. And it's quite something that they've now had to, like, undo all that stuff. So the saddle and the bikes of women's sport, specifically in bike racing. Like, now if you look at a bike for a woman and a bike for a man, I don't know, maybe they're very different, probably barely any differences.
Mm.
And they're just about, the design is like having to undo the design that they made back then. I find that really interesting.
I think that the obsession with, like, the physical differences between women and men is, like, something that we're now experiencing, you know, like, as much as the anti-bike movement of the 19th century must have been a bit crazy, like the pro-bikers and the anti-bikers.
Yeah.
Like, it's no less ridiculous than the anti-drag story times.
Yeah.
And the, you know, like the...
We'll look back on the anti-drag stuff and just laugh.
I mean, I'm looking at it right now and I'm like, what the hell is everyone... Why is it such a problem? Like, but this...
Again, it's the
masculine,
same
feminine thing, like this war. Like, no, but they can't be like that because it will make them like this. And you can't control everything. You know, like, I was reading about the blues women and stuff and the record, like, the invention of the record propelled Bessie Smith to be the highest earning black artist in America.
Yeah.
At the time.
Mm-hmm.
And saved Columbia Records, which is a huge record company that produced hundreds of bands, right?
Yeah.
They were going to go into bankruptcy before that. But that was the invention of something that liberated her voice, but also led to other things, you know. All these little inventions change people's lives in ways we can't control. Mm-hmm. And you never know what's going to come of it. No. So stop fucking bloody... Yeah, stop this, stop that, you know. Mm-hmm. Get on ChatGPT. Learn to utilise it.
Yeah.
You silly sausages.
You silly sausages. AI is our friend.
Because otherwise mad people are going to use it.
Yeah, this is true. This is very true.
That's the end of that.
Thanks, guys, for listening.
Thank you, Emma.
Thank you, Hester.
Pleasure doing business with you.
As always.
Ciao for now.
Bye.
Bye.